Welcome to Don't Call Me Boomer. I'm your host, Sandra Bialystok. Welcome to Don't Call Me Boomer, the podcast where I interview my kids and their friends about the things of their lives that I don't understand as a way of bridging the generational divide. On today's episode, we're speaking with Jacob, one of Gabriel's friends, about ChatGPT. Hi, Jacob.
Hello.
Thanks for coming. It's great to have you on the podcast today. So, Jacob, let's, as you know, we're doing this special series on ChatGPT to get your opinion and other sort of teenagers' opinions about ChatGPT, generative AI, how you're thinking about it, and how you're using these new tools. So let's just jump right in. And if you could just explain to me in your own words what ChatGPT is.
Okay, so I'm very technology interested, so my view is probably a bit different than the average person. So basically, so how I see it. So ChatGPT is basically, so it's made by a company called OpenAI, and they were not the first people to, so, and it uses an AI model, and this is something, you know, I'm not an expert in degrees for this stuff, called the Transformer model. And this is a type of AI model invented by Google, funnily enough, which then OpenAI, they then took this AI model, and it basically what this AI model needs lots of data. So they, you know, went on the internet, scraped lots of data from websites. And, you know, this is an actual, you know, this is work of it's a lot of work of itself to find, you know, good data. Many people are employed to do this as an actual job. To scrape data and then to collect it, and then you. Basically, the AI model gets trained on it, and it basically its main job is that you give it a list of words, a list of tokens, is the technical term, and then it has to find words which match. This is then put with a very nice web UI, and it made so it looks like a chatbot, and this is ChatGPT. Yeah, so that's what it is.
Great, thanks. And web UI means,
well, like a, you know, like a website, like
right, like a user interface. Yeah. So it's a website. Yeah, fantastic. And no, it's a great explanation and definitely enters more into some of the technical details. And so for you, how often do you think you use, let's talk about ChatGPT.
So my usage, well, I use ChatGPT. I don't have any, you know, how many times per day. I don't use it. I definitely don't use it daily. I use it sometimes. So I would break it down, so general for people I know, there's three types of usage. So the one type is to actually do work for you. And this is something I don't do. I think is sort of cheating in some contexts. And second of all, I think the answers are just not very good, in my opinion. And it's, you know, I'm just, but some people are fine with that and they would rather have ChatGPT and do their work. So, and this is things like write me an essay or, I have 5 slides about Louis Pasteur. Please give me all the script, and it goes through, and then you may. And that's basically what I mean by that. And then the second use case is just what I sometimes use is for what I call brainstorming or research. Research. Some people use it for actual research, or they're actually trying to find facts. My opinion, this is not a good use case because you know, there's lots of examples where it just gives you wrong information. And for example, there's a very famous example where like an anesthesiologist, forgot his name, Max something, and basically he asked ChatGPT like questions about, you know, basic medical questions you would have in medical school, and it tells you things which would, you know, could cause the patient horrible pain, and you know, so in general, ChatGPT is not very accurate, and this is again because it just, you know, just squirts out things it has already heard from before. It just, you know, regurgitates things it has heard from millions of other websites before. But that's one on our use case, research. And then sometimes I also use it for, which I use it for, is what I would call brainstorming. So it's like, or for example, if you need to have, for example, if you need ideas, so for example, you ask it, for example, something which I do, which is very annoying work to do, is you say, so you get an essay question, for example, demonstrate how character X is portrayed in Lion. This is not very interesting, but something like that. And then you can use it to find quotes, which is because, especially if you have a big novel, which you know, you have 500 pages, you could not remember every quote. So it's very useful for you can ask it, for example, if they remember that the quotations it gives you are often garbage because it just, but you can, it can help you to give you like a basic idea in like in which chapter some things are located. So it's useful for that.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a new use case that hasn't come up yet. And I think that's a really, that's a very effective use of the tool, actually, to kind of, you know that a character has said something about whatever somewhere in the book because you've read the book. And then you're kind of, and then you're using the tool to scour the book for you instead of spending 20 minutes or an hour or whatever it is to try and find that exact right quote. You're honing in on specifics.
And I want to add one more thing. One last use case, which I don't use, but this is really just because I'm not used to it. So it's, which I think, which is quite interesting, is that many people use it as a replacement to Google search. Like, right. Literally, you know, they have like, the app on their phone, and if they have like a question, like, you know, sometimes you just have questions in general, like, you know, oh, where's this restaurant? Or like math problems. And instead of Googling it, you ask ChatGPT. And I don't use it because, my opinion, it is always given very bad results.
Mm.
I've not tried to, you know, if you go to other languages, it gets way, 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 way worse. Be like, you know, for example, German or French, you know, this is like very popular, spoken by many people. But, you know, yeah. If you go to languages which are spoken by people who don't use ChatGPT as much, you know, their quality goes
interesting,
way down.
Yeah, we haven't talked about this in these other episodes that we've done on ChatGPT about other languages. And even though everyone that I've been speaking to speaks at least two languages, you know, on this show.
But I only use English, so.
So you're not using it in German or in French or anything.
Well, sometimes I use it. You can ask like questions about French sometimes, but yeah. Really communicating within French, you know.
No. And I know that there are companies that are starting to use it for translation purposes.
Oh, yes.
And sort of, have you used it on that level?
Well, so not ChatGPT itself, but there is a very famous German company, I think, called DeepL.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just objectively much better than Google Translate. And And it's mostly, you know, it's, and my dad has a friend who used to be a professional translator.
So. Okay. Yeah.
And he said, like, and translators, I mean, I could spend a lot of time talking about this, but basically they're paid by word. So
yeah.
You give them a document and they're paid by, not by the hour, but by the word.
Yeah.
So he said that, I mean, this works so well in this DeepL that because he doesn't do translation work anymore. Because he says that for him, he doesn't have not enough work anymore. So he does some other stuff now.
Yeah.
But for him, he said he does it part-time now. So what he does, if someone gives him something, he goes through, runs it through DeepL.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he does, because obviously it's not perfect, especially expressions and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's much better in Google Translate.
It is.
He just runs through and then proofreads.
And so that's how he's getting it, doing the work now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So and he's a quite practical person. So because he's not like, oh, I'm not going to use this, it's going to replace my job. But fact is that, like he said, in 5 years, the only real use cases for translators will be, because the main business used to be, like, the bread and butter of these people used to be, manuals, like, something else, which is really surprising, like, something unexpected, like, I think manuals is one, but now this is all going away, so the only things which is used is, founding treaties of the European Union or whatever. So they still have professional translators because obviously you don't want to mess up.
Right.
Books. Because you just need, because for books you need, that's just different. You need someone who understands the language.
Absolutely. And the nuance of language. And there's sometimes when you're translating books, then, you know, there's some kind of cultural reference that doesn't make sense in the translation.
Absolutely.
And so you need to be, it can't be a literal translation. No. It has to be a comparative translation, like a comparison to something in pop culture that the new audience would understand.
Yeah. And these, so to finish this off, these communities, so what I've heard, like these book translating communities, they're very selective. So basically he said that there's no chance that he's getting into it. And it's not because of quality of translation, it's just used to be lucky. So because publishers, you know, there's not much demand. I mean, there's like not so many books published, and especially there are not so many books which actually get translated.
Right.
So not many. So, and especially some cases are really exotic. So I think, like, for example, if you're Norwegian to English translator, for example, something which... Norway is a very small country, so you won't get many books.
Right. So the number of books being written in Norwegian is...
And basically, the publishers have to know you. So if you're lucky and you have a friend who's a publisher, not very common, then it happens. Then you get lots of requests.
Yeah.
But, this friend I was referring to, he's this German Spanish. So this is not something...
Oh, wow.
An English Spanish. So this is something, you know...
Yeah.
There's been lots of them.
There's a lot more. Interesting. So, okay. So translation is... So AI... is taking over in the translation world, and you have a real-world example of how that's happening. Can we talk a bit more about using Gen AI in a school situation? So you've talked about the three different ways that you've seen, that you see other people use ChatGPT, for instance, and how you use it. Can we talk a bit about how... your teachers are talking about it and what the information that they're giving you or the lack of information that they're giving you?
Okay, so I don't think in school it was directly mentioned. So there was definitely, obviously not, there was not an, like an announcement like, oh, ChatGPT exists. And there's no, I don't think there's a unit, so in my school, and this is surprising because our school is very bureaucratic. You have lots of policies for literally everything you can imagine. So I would know the everything from diversity policy to toilet policy. But this is some of the things which I think they don't have. But because our school is part of the IB,
so the International Baccalaureate.
Yeah, exactly. To mention, so it's a international diploma, which also, like, the school itself is very bureaucratic, very dry, and lots of very messy, lots of stuff, just. Lots of words.
Yeah.
And they have some policies, but this was never really mentioned to us. I just heard this.
Okay. So they, some kind of policy was devised, but they didn't communicate it to the students.
I think my English teacher from last year, I think she mentioned ChatGPT, to explain what the rules are, but that was the only case. And even then, also, I mean, the problem with ChatGPT is, so I'll give you an example. It's a better example. Something which is a bit harder. History presentation, okay? So history presentation is a bit more difficult, especially sometimes because it's quite difficult. Sometimes the concepts are quite complicated, so you need to find a way. So the one approach is to actually spend time and understand the topic. Because normally how this works is that they give you... So normally how this is done is that you have like a... So you learn something in school, and then you have like a, you spin a virtual wheel or something, from a list of related subtopics. So in French, we did something about medieval periods.
Right.
So then you could pick or randomly assign to you. So for example, I had to do feudalism and someone else had to do the role of women in the Middle Ages, I think.
Okay.
One.
So you're doing Middle Ages in French and you're talking about feudalism. Okay.
Yeah. And an example, I think this was this this year? I remember.
It
doesn't matter. Okay. It was some years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And basically, the topic was given, and basically everyone used ChatGPT, and it was you could see, like, you have to give a sources document, you see typical stuff like books, sites, and then you you're reading ChatGPT, and then it says,
oh, really? And they're citing it.
Oh, wow. Obviously, because that's just like, and that's something which I have no idea how you even cite ChatGPT.
Yeah,
because there's many problems. First of all, ChatGPT does not give you a consistent response. So obviously, I look up, tell me how feudalism works, it's not going to give you the same thing.
Right.
It's even worse than a Google search because it just...
Google search is based on search engine optimization on an SEO, and so if you type in the same words into a Google search and Gabriel types in the same words, you'll get Google search
sort of similar.
You'll get more or less the same results. But if you do the same thing in a ChatGPT as a prompt, then the likelihood of getting massively different results is high. Yeah.
Yeah. So. That's why I don't even know how you cited, but there's definitely some policy written by, I think what we use is MLA.
Yeah.
One of the millions of citation styles.
Okay.
And so, they have a policy. But again,
okay,
this is really complicated because I think it's classified as an interview with an expert.
Really? ChatGPT is like, because it's a chat bot and you're asking.
I think so. At least I think that's originally what we're supposed to do.
Huh.
Obviously, then you have to put the entire conversation.
Okay, right. So you write in your, so if you're citing it, then you write what your prompt is, and then you also show when the result is.
Like a text dump of the actual conversation, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, that makes sense, because if you're interviewing with someone, you do the same thing.
You would do the same thing. Yep. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
But
so the kids, so you guys are doing in French, you're doing this research assignment, and so kids are just using ChatGPT to get all of their information, basically, and then writing it up in an essay.
And the reason why it's so easy is just because the problem with Google searches are it's just technically you could be more specific. So obviously you could generate stuff. So because the main job of ChatGPT, in some sense, is to summarize. That's like, the main thing it does. And so the whole point of a presentation, in some sense, other than, presentation skills, which is something different.
Sure.
And, visuals. But the main thing is to summarize lots of information.
Right. And as a student, you need to learn how to ingest information, think about it, and then regurgitate it in a way that is logical and that is in your own words and so on.
And this basic thing you can apply to many things, and that's why ChatGPT is so good at this.
Right. So what do you think, given that ChatGPT exists and everybody has access to it, how do you see schools regulating it or teaching kids how to use it in a responsible way? What would you see? What would you propose as kind of a responsible way forward?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would see, I think, first of all, that's a big problem in general. And I'm not saying it's an easy thing, but people are generally, this is a general human thing. People are scared of new things. People are scared things they don't know. And, all these people in like the IB regulator, whatever you want to call them, they're probably a bit concerned. But honestly, ChatGPT is from their point of view, I don't see it as different. I think they just have to be a bit more stricter in the rules. I mean, obviously, you just don't bring a computer.
Okay, so...
So I've had my own arguments with the rules, for example. So my handwriting, for example, is terrible. really terrible. And there used to be a rule where you could write it with a computer.
Yeah.
The IB.
Right.
But they removed that rule for absolutely no reason. And this really annoys me because for me, honestly, this is not because writing really slows me down. Because the thing is, I think it's something which people don't realize. It's not like that the problem is not that the teacher cannot read what you're writing. And that's what people think. Oh, the problem is you write and then the teacher can't read what you wrote. So she marks down or he marks everything down. But that's not what happens. What happens is that you write very slowly. So the teacher can read what you're writing.
And then it slows you down.
And then
I think it depends on who you are.
Yeah. But that's something which happens to me, for example.
Fair enough. Okay. So you're in a bit of a double bind, right? So you want to be able to use computers because you can type faster than you can write. And
much faster,
than you can handwrite. And therefore you can write more as well. And it'll be legible to everybody. But at the same time, you're saying that there shouldn't be access to computers because of the access to ChatGPT.
But I think that's quite a simple solution because this is not computers haven't been a new thing. And I think the solution is quite obvious. So first of all, most of this software requires internet. So already, if you kill the internet, you already solve 95% of your problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you provide school computers, like actual
and
for example, they do this, or like an actual desktop computer.
Sure, yeah.
Which is managed by the school.
Yeah.
And you could turn off spell checkers. I understand.
Right.
To be fair, you have to turn off spell checker. Although you could argue, is it really necessary to even mark spelling if spelling is corrected automatically? But that's different discussion. But you could turn off spell checker. You could turn off the spell checker and you cut off the internet. So I think that's just...
Okay. So you're advocating then for a school policy that eliminates access to these kinds of...
During
exams. But it doesn't help with the homework situation.
Well, Homework, the homework, but this hasn't really changed because the homework, I mean, but you used to be the parents who do it, and now it's the, it really isn't that different, especially, you know, and if you have very, you know, caring parents, and especially who have lots of time, which, you know, and if they have time, then they do the homework for you. And I mean, yeah, I'm just...
Or not caring parents, because they don't care about your education, and they're doing
that for you. That's a good point. It's a very good point. So it depends how you see it.
Yeah.
It's a very good point. But in general, I meant like more like, you know, but yeah, if you're very concerned about the education, yes, yeah, that sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Then, well, they do the homework for you.
Right.
So, yeah, technically makes it easier, obviously, because your parents are right. Yeah. And
right.
Depending on how good your parents are, it might be better or worse.
Yeah, maybe you don't want your parents doing your homework. Depends. In some cases.
But people
are ChatGPT, if you're not for that matter, because
people
be giving you
overestimate how good ChatGPT is. Because
right.
ChatGPT is really good at all this, for example, English work, you
right.
know, or this stuff for you. I mean, it is very repetitive, but I don't know if it's really useful to learn, but I don't mind. But for example, a typical question for an essay is, you read a book and how does Jones's behavior during the novel affect character X?
So, right.
This, which is, I mean, it's, you can...
They're generic questions, especially yeah. in a high school situation. They're going to be questions that have been asked a million times, and therefore those essays exist online.
Yes,
and therefore
yes.
it will generate an essay that sort of is amalgam of
especially
all the
if you, you know, do. And I mean, Animal Farm, the book I'm doing right.
Right,
now.
Right.
This
I mean,
the
Animal
most,
Farm is.
I mean, even my grandparents did it for, and you know, and they did it for, well, obviously because their English education is a bit lower, because they're a foreign language.
Right.
So they did it for their diploma. They had to do at the Animal Farm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So but and then they do Animal Farm in that
right.
sense.
Right.
And the thing is also, especially because in high school situations normally because. You don't really think about the outside the book itself, and like in the sense, for example, Animal Farm, the specific case, obviously has references to the Soviet Union, and,
right?
Which is
sure.
very yeah. obvious. But in our school, we haven't talked about that at all, which sort of surprised me. You know, I've read Animal Farm before, and was,
yeah,
and the first thing which it says, like even the book itself, it has like a on a hammer, a sickle, like a paw, so. It's yeah. quite obvious that it refers to like communism and
right.
communist revolutions, but in the school we haven't really talked about that. It's because it's focused on the book itself,
right? And if you were to put it into ChatGPT, like write an essay about something or other, then probably there'll be lots of
book focused. Yeah.
Oh well, I was going to say, sort of, if it's taking what lots of other people have said about Animal Farm, then it'll start talking about communism. And then it sort of
actually
becomes a giveaway.
That is actually a problem. So I think it's better if it's focused on the book because it's because it has the book itself in its data source, which has the
right.
book itself. Because people, you know, I mean, books, piracy is a lot of new thing. People dump PDFs of the book everywhere.
Sure.
But you're very right. So that's actually a big problem because ChatGPT often writes stuff like an expert in some sense.
Yeah.
And speculates a lot in that sense.
Yeah.
So that's a very good point. So if you ask, often it will not quote the book itself, or the quotations are garbage because it right. just generates it. Again, because the thing is, that what people misunderstand about ChatGPT is not intelligent in some sense. That's why that's why I was not worried that we're killing a conscious being, because it's very different. Because ChatGPT doesn't think, and it's not like a dog, which is not very intelligent. Like it doesn't think at all. It just, and if you go into the technical details, basically what you do is ChatGPT basically, so it guesses what word. You know, like I said, you know, it goes through words and has to guess which word to say next.
Yeah,
and basically you make that guess better by training it. So you say guess for this, and you have to, you basically like mold the guess into the right shape in some sense.
Yeah.
But it doesn't think. It doesn't go through the text and say, you've just said, the ChatGPT doesn't go through its code and say, let's go through Animal Farm and let's analyze the quotations.
Right. Of course, it's not doing that. Just like it, going back to the translation model, where you need actual people to be translating books because they're the ones who understand the nuance and the emotion and the references, and they're the ones that can translate to a different culture.
Yeah.
So to wrap up here, can we talk a bit about kind of whether you're what your feelings about generative AI are in terms of optimism for the future, fear for the future. Can you talk a little bit about how you feel about the sort of the future, the prospects of these kinds of tools?
Well, so that's a good question. I'm not too worried. I mean, honestly, I think one thing is that AI is very hyped in some sense. A lot is being talked about it, and I think it's a bit less important than it really is. You know, there's like this very famous in the tech industry, there's this very famous thing called the Gartner hype cycle, where it's like a graph. And basically the idea is that the technology starts at the bottom, and then the expectations get super high and it gets really popular. And then it goes down because people realize that it's actually not very useful. And then it goes back up and then they realize how to actually use it. So, and AI, it's actually funny because the company which makes these charts, they sell it for an actual business because for investors, I think, to want to invest in companies. But yeah, so I think AI is like, look at the graph, like on the top, you know, people think it can do literally everything, which I think is not true. AI, what I think AI will do is it will make us as humans, especially the school system, if we focus about school, question if some things are necessary to do. Like, for example, some of this English work, I think you would have to change a bit what you do in English. English would have to be more focused on how to write well,
mm-hmm.
And especially how to write opinion, I think, because that's something which obviously AI cannot do as well. And I think less, and all this book analysis, literature analysis stuff, which one, most people are not interested in, which is just a fact. And second of all,
I, for example,
find it quite interesting if the book is good.
Fair.
But the fact is that for many people, it's a chore. It's a chore for the school system.
Yeah.
But that's not a problem because it is a useful skill. But now if ChatGPT is so well at doing it, you know, like at the level of a student, obviously, you know, if you study this in a university, it's very different. But then that's a different level. But at the level of a student, the level what the IB, for example, wants to examine you for,
mm-hmm.
it's questionable if it's really useful for you to learn it that much. So
okay,
that's some quite. I mean, I'm not saying that's my opinion, but it's just some things we need to ask. And
right.
Now, for example, in translation work, well, and also a big problem is, although I'm not so sure if some people claim that it will be a huge threat to writers.
Uh-huh.
I'm not really that sure because for a book, you do need like a good idea. So I'm not sure, but it might help writers be a bit faster. And I do think it might be a bit bad like for like editors and stuff. It'll be a bit difficult. And some writers, some jobs where the writing is very repetitive and it's very, I mean, a bit like the basic literature stuff where it's already done by millions of people, you know, and then you could find it online. Mm. And then it's something where it's questionable if it's necessary. Mm.
Okay. So you see a future where, I mean, some pretty major questions need to be asked about what education would look like, or sort of with a future,
at least for English,
for specific subjects, and also a future where there are jobs that become where, despite where you are on this chart this graph, there will invariably be jobs that will be lost because of their repetitive nature, and automation and so on will take over.
Yeah. So final thing. Yeah. I mean, I do think some jobs will go away, but it's not like the industrial revolution or something. I really don't think it's going to be that far. I think it's just things that now because of AI, they have to be questioned even more. But it was already before the internet starting to grow. It was for some things, it was quite obvious that, like, for example, if so many of these essays are already written, and it's. No, it's not cheating. It really isn't hard. I mean, not that I've done it seriously, but really isn't hard. Like, it's especially in something like English, math, it's quite difficult because in math, they can strip you of all your supplies. They can say, the pen and pencil. And that's
right.
But
go for,
you need to have a book for English and for communion. You might have like a book where you have like quotations written down. They don't really allow this. And then it's so easy to smuggle in an essay. Like, you chop it into small pieces.
Yes.
I've heard stories. You know, I cannot prove, it's probably a bit exaggerated, but you know, I can imagine how this is not impossible.
Yeah.
So the even before, I think it's just because before people, I think also it just feels a bit more unethical if you directly copy something.
Yeah.
And also it's much more easy to check because that's also the big problem. Like all these AI checkers, they're awful. Like I have, for example, I have like a text I wrote myself and it says 50% AI generated. And I mean, it is only good. It is good at detecting, and especially because the smarter people, what they do is that they write an essay with ChatGPT and then they fill in the quotes and they dumb down the language.
Oh.
Because obviously if you write, in my opinion, this, it reveals in an exemplary way. You know, if you use words which a high school student would never use
right.
in their life.
Right. It's a dead giveaway.
So they, you know, dumb it down, they remove the words, and then they fill in the quotes. Because the quotes are garbage, so they look for the
quotes. So then they do
the paste in the quotes.
Yeah, and they're
and then they, you know, take it with them, cut it to small pieces, and then the main thing is that they can write much more because it's already pre-written. So even if you edit it in your head, you don't have to think. You don't have to find quotes. Yeah. I'm done for you.
Wow. Well, that's a bit of a bleak way to end this episode. Smart kids know how to cheat better.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Jacob, for all of your thoughts and insight. It's been great to have you on. And if you have any thoughts or opinions yourself, then reach out to us and write us at boomer@don'tcallmeboomer.com. And don't forget to like and subscribe and follow us and tell all of your friends about us. And we will talk to you next time. Bye.